Wham!
Oppenheimer!
I think they're talking about us. No way.
I myself am strange and unusual.
This is Nerd Play Radio!
Nerd alert!
These nerds are a threat to our way of life.
See, this is the stuff that brings nerds together.
So it's sort of social. Demented and sad, but social, right?
If I'm interested in it, then by definition, it is nerdy.
Are you in loser denial or something?
I'm a nerd, and I'm pretty proud of it.
My dad's a nerd.
And welcome to episode 222 of Nerd Pride Radio. 222, that's three twos in a row! It is, but you know what else? 222 is also a strobogrammatic number.
A strobo-what-what?
Yeah, and you know what that means, don't you?
No.
That means it looks the same upside down when viewed on a calculator. They have a word for that. Somebody made up a word, strobogrammatic, for numbers that look the same upside down on a calculator.
Why would you have a why? Also, 8008 is also the same way.
Right, exactly, strobogrammatic. We will bring this up again whenever we get to 8008. Boob. So, ask me how I'm doing today. Go on, ask me.
How you doing?
I am awesome! My name is Mike Jones. I am a D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a science nerd, I don't know him. I don't. I can't. He told me I had to do it without my notes, and for some reason I can't get through all of my nerds without looking. A D&D slash Pathfinder nerd, a history nerd, a sci-fi nerd, a comic book nerd, computer nerd, movie nerd, comedy nerd, science nerd, gaming nerd, plus! There's like seven other kinds of nerd I only wish I was nerdy enough to be. I can't believe
I
did it.
By Jove, I think he's got it.
You're listening to Nerd Pride Radio, the place I go over every week to haver on about all the nerd stuff that just won't fit in my skull anymore. Oh, and this week's show is dedicated to the memory of the Flag Five, brave defenders of the city, taken from us too soon. Okay, now it's time for the meticulously plotted portion of the podcast. This is the time for me when I talk about whatever's been on my mind for the last week. If something strikes me as interesting during the course of my busy, busy week, I add it to my master list, and then the very best stuff off of that list gets spewed out all over you guys every week when I record. You lucky dogs. And just so you're aware, Jacob's here visiting. He brought Godot with him, so the cats are scrambling around in the background. You are going to hear them. I can't do anything about
it. It's not you might. You're going to.
Right. Well, that happened the last time, too. Godot kept getting up on the table.
And also, Jacob kept being weird, too.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, like I said, into the master list. We're going to start off this week with an uncomfortable topic. Mm. Yeah, I know. It's all right. Uncomfortable topics is the kind of stuff that you don't want to discuss at the Thanksgiving dinner table, usually political, certainly contentious. And hey, so I'm listening to the debate podcast I listened to, and they were talking about liberalism versus conservatism. There you go. Whatever it is. And, that's not what I'm here to talk about. I mean, it was the question for the week was, do liberals hold the moral high ground? And as it turns out, they lost. And it turns out that, according to the audience, they don't. But that's not the point. The point was, there was, during the course of this discussion, a bunch of talk about school choice and schools in America in general. And they talked about charter schools and school choice and all these different options for education. And the one thing that I was amazed did not get talked about was, and I mean, and this is, look, this is a podcast that has some of the more prominent political minds in the country, people from big news organizations, big think tanks. Howard Dean was on the liberal side of this one. So people you recognize, people who are prominent in the field. And as they were all talking about schools and options for schools, the one thing that surprised me that never came up and should come up in every discussion about schools and failing schools in this nation and what do we do about this situation. Why is no one talking about the fact that we need to first and foremost make sure that every school in this country has access to approximately the same resources as every other school in this country? All right. We talk about failing schools, but when schools are so dependent on local funding, you can have a mostly minority, inner city school, your stereotypical failing school that they want to show on the news all the time. And you can have one of these schools, from some part of Chicago or wherever it is. And they will go on about how they have overcrowded classrooms and they struggle because they don't even have enough textbooks for everyone in the class. And so the kids have to share textbooks. And then you can find within 15 miles of that, you can find a suburban school that is not mostly minority. And they have, as our elementary or as our high schools, junior highs and high schools have here in our area, you can find them with laptops assigned. Every student when they start school in seventh grade is assigned a laptop that follows them for their entire high school career and that they get to take home and use as they will because, you know, every kid needs a laptop in order to be current in today's education. And so here you have these two schools just 15 miles from each other. And yet somehow with that disparity of resources, people have the audacity to start comparing them with, well, I wonder why this school is failing. Maybe what we need to do is punish them by taking away some of their funding because they can't. I mean,
wouldn't less funding make them do less good?
Right. You either
and thus creating a vicious cycle.
Oh yeah. No, look,
does this disproportionately affect minorities?
Of course it does. Of course it does. And so again, one school can't find enough textbooks for all their kids. Another school issues laptops to everybody. And you start asking, well, I wonder where the problem is. Maybe we should start testing the teachers. Maybe we should, you know what? You guys are right. Because honestly, the failing school, if they had just managed their money better, I'm sure they would have come up with all that laptop money for their kids if they had just been wiser about how they spent it. It's so idiotic to me that we rely on local funding and then complain that there's a disparity in school performance. Well, of course there's a disparity. Because middle class and wealthy schools have lots of money to educate their kids and poor schools don't because it's all based on local property tax funding. And yes, there's federal and state supplemental funding and all that, but it doesn't even any of this out. And they have the balls to stand there and go, well, just throwing money at the problem isn't going to make a difference. That's not what's going to help. Well, yeah, no, because that's what makes the wealthy schools do so well is you threw money at them. Morons. Oh, so it just kills me that this conversation has been driven so far towards the direction of school choice and for-profit schooling and all of this stuff. It's been driven so far in that direction that the idea of throwing money at the problem isn't even argued anymore. It's like not even on the table when that's really the answer. The answer is to make sure everyone's got the same resources. Do you have something?
I'd just like to say that I'm sufficiently uncomfortable.
Hey! Uncomfortable. Sweet. It just drives me crazy. So, I put this all on your guys' shoulders now too. Alright? I'm aware of it. You're aware of it. Let's bring this into the conversation. When people start talking about school choice and vouchers and charter schools and all this other stuff, let's also make it incumbent on all of us to bring into the conversation the disparity of resources that leads to a lot of our issues in the first place. And yet, there's lots of confounding factors. There's lots of other things that go into a school's success or failure. Absolutely. But man, this is a huge one. This is a huge one, and we've gotten to a point where we don't even discuss it anymore. It's like not even on the table, and I don't get that. It drives me crazy. All right, so now we're going to peel away from that, and we're going to get into a brand new segment.
You have a lot of those recently, huh?
I know. But this is one called Treppenwitz.
We have wanted to do this segment forever.
ever. All right.
We've needed this segment like you wouldn't believe.
Treppenwitz is literally staircase wit. It is a German term, but there's also a French term that means spirit of the staircase. And for those of you who aren't familiar with it, Treppenwitz is literally the perfect response or comeback that you don't think of until you're already on your way down the steps and out the door. All right. It's staircase wit. It's that perfect, perfect funny line that you come up with way too late to actually use it. And, I have had tons of this, but now that, Aiden is on more regularly and he's been listening to the podcast as well. And both of us have these moments where we're listening to the podcast in review and go, oh God, you know what I should have said there. All right. Well, now we get to do it thanks to our new segment called Treppenwitz. And we should have some music for this or something, but
I'll see if I can find some.
Well, yeah, look around. Give me some,
that new wave stuff I like, huh?
You're right. No, I want
some folk trance.
Some folk trance. I wish I could do those bits like you do. All right. Anyway, so Aiden, from last week's episode, I need you to say, hey, what if it was a self-deconstruct button?
What if instead of ships self-destructing, instead they just self-deconstructed?
Oh my God. Self-deconstruction in 5, 4, 3, 2, wait. You know, what's the point of the countdown anyway, though? I mean, isn't this really so overdone? Why wouldn't you just have a remote detonator that you set off once you're in the clear? I mean, doesn't that make a lot more sense? This one just gives you a chance to get caught in your own explosion. It gives the good guys a chance to defuse things. I mean, seriously, it makes no sense at all. All right, thank you for laughing, because that's the whole point of Treppenwitz is, oh man, think of how funny that would have been if it had sounded like I came up with that right off the top of my head.
This segment is about how funny we could be on the podcast.
That's exactly what it is. We'll have to put that into the title portion of it. We'll put all that together later.
Episode 222, funny we could be.
Damn right. All right. Now, you have one as well?
Yeah, I have it typed out here. Let me just... Ugh.
Oh, yes, he's even typed it up in preparation. All right, I will read this one off.
That'll go there.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Oh, okay, here we go. My line. But I don't think I could see the Blue Man Group again because, I mean, a lot of their show looks spontaneous, but once you see it in review and you watch the videos online, you realize, oh, they do this every show. It's very meticulously planned out, requires a lot of plants in the audience.
Oh, that's why we were seated next to the fern.
See? That's perfect. Okay. Man, we think we're funny. All right. And that was Treppenwitz. Ta-da! All right. Next up, do you want to do awesome in the 80s first, or should we just do the fingertips quick?
Well, let's keep the long stuff to the end here.
All right. Now it's time for some fingertips.
Fingertips. Fingertips. Fingertips. Fingertips.
You have got to stop doing that. Seriously. Okay. under fingertips, I have one that I'm going to put off until another time. I think I'm actually going to flesh this out into a full bit. And instead, I'm going to go with, you know what? Stephen Colbert and I, we have very similar tastes in stuff. He just this last week.
Is it Aqua Velva? Is that your similar taste?
No, but so good. No, this last week, he had John McWhorter on his show, who I love John McWhorter from Lexicon Valley. And Stephen says that's where he knows him from, is from Lexicon Valley. So clearly Stephen Colbert and I listen to the same podcasts. He's got that Captain America shield that I would so love to have. He's a huge Lord of the Rings fan. He brought Sean Evans onto his show because he loves the Hot Ones show on YouTube so much. I love Hot Ones. All right. So I'm just saying, I think if I could meet Stephen Colbert in real life, I think we would be awesome friends.
I think the universe would implode because he comes from a parallel dimension where you're successful.
He is so cool. No. That's the magic of it, is that it turns out he's a fan of my podcast. I get to be on his show. All of a sudden, I've got a million subscribers I don't know what to do with. It would be awesome. All right. It's just a matter of getting him to listen just one time. And then, boom, it all opens up for me. So what I need to do is I need to have, like, every third or fourth episode, I need to have a big Stephen Colbert segment that I can then put his name into the liner notes, and then he'll take notice of us. That's how it works, right?
Notice me, Stephen Senpai.
Yeah. Oh, and then, okay, and then that was my one.
Colbert-chan.
That was my one, fingertip. And then my next one is, a cat story, because, you know, I have cats. And I gotta tell you, my cat Raven, black cat, the one who's very aloof and hides from us all the time, and we very rarely see her.
I wouldn't say it's aloof. I'd say it's more paranoid than anything.
Right. Yes, my very paranoid, maybe PTSD. I don't know what her problem is, but something like that. And anyway, she does not come out very often. Well, she's been coming out even more lately. Like, I know I say that every time because it's this very slow, gradual process.
But she's out even when the boys are being loud and rowdy.
Right. Doesn't instinctively run away just because someone opens the door.
Or she used to run away every time I'd just stand up.
Yeah. And so here's the thing that I've noticed this week, and this is the cute portion of the cat story, is, hey, Aiden, you're loud. Says so right there.
Yeah, apparently.
We just got a text message that says, Aiden's loud.
Thanks, Mom!
Yeah, you're going to have to keep it down. The boys are sleeping. All right. So, anyway, here's the bit. Is Raven comes out now looking for attention, and she's awkward about it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, so hideously awkward. Like,
hold on. Because, like, when she wants attention, she'll walk up to you and start rubbing up against you, and the moment you lay a hand on her, she just dead weights and just drops to the floor and like, okay, pet me.
Yeah, well, and even more than that, like I noticed that Bear is very smooth about getting attention, and he always has been. Bear will come up to you, he'll like snake his way up beside you and just slide his head up underneath your hand, like it's just been there this whole time. Start scratching.
Yeah,
he's very smooth. Whereas Raven comes up to get attention to that. Yeah, exactly. It's just like, she just like headbutts you with the side of her skull. I mean, like, she's just like, her whole body just kind of thunk, thunk, thunk.
Hey, I've been here the whole time.
She doesn't get it. She's sweet and adorable and it just makes you love her that much more, but she has not figured out how to be smooth about the attention getting yet. But she's getting there. She's practicing and she's trying. That's all that matters. All right. Do you have any fingertips?
I have 10 of them.
Okay. Then in that case, we're going to move on to, let's see. Oh, wait. There it is. All right.
Oh boy. And now it's time to open up with yet another 80s movie that my dad swears used to be wicked awesome.
It was awesome in the 80s, but not anymore. It was awesome in the 80s, but not today.
Yes, this is awesome in the 80s. My dad, who is old, picks out a movie from the 80s that he loved back when he was a kid. Then we watch it together, and I tell him why he's wrong. Dad, tell him what we're watching.
All right, this week, we watched Trading Places. Like, we literally just watched it before we started recording. And we were going to watch Valley Girl, which now, it was on last month. Now this month it says, simply not available anywhere. Like, you can't rent it, you can't nothing. All right.
Oh, by the way, really, before we continue, for my notes on this portion, I'd like to point out that I abbreviated awesome in the 80s, and it just comes out to 80s anyway, so.
That's really cool. All right, we need that.
A-I-T-E apostrophe S.
And then, instead of Valley Girl, I figured, all right, well, you know what, let's finally watch Revenge of the Nerds. We'll just rent it on Amazon, because I know it's not streaming for free anymore. No, you can't rent it on Amazon anymore, because you can only get it with a subscription to Stars. If you don't have a subscription to Stars, you can't watch Revenge of the Nerds. Oh, fine. So we're flipping back, and it's like, oh, hey, there's Teen Wolf. Let's watch Teen Wolf.
Nope.
Teen Wolf is only with a subscription to the Amazon Prime Spotlight or whatever the hell they call it. Ridiculous. It's like the Amazon Prime. Like, oh.
Amazon Prime X gon' give it to you. I don't know.
And so then we stumbled across Trading Places and figured, all right, that's where we're going with it. And, all right, look, I saw Trading Places a ton of times when I was in high school.
Was it all the boobs?
It was that movie was so funny. Just straight up a funny movie. And loved every minute of it. I watched it, like I say, at least a dozen times. I've seen Trading Places. Thought it was a great movie. I love the finale. Just awesome. Yeah, there's lots of boobs in it. A lot more than you'd expect.
And I expected a lot, and there was more than I expected. So. Yeah,
and now, I've always had a little bit of a problem with the sudden shift towards the end, but we'll get to that in a little bit. But even with that, still always thought it was funny. So, what do we think?
That's a difficult question.
Okay. Well, what's...
There were times that I laughed.
Uh-huh.
But it's... When you watch it from my perspective, there's a lot in that movie that... Man, it's just awkward when put to paper now.
What you mean? Okay, well, I don't know how much you want to get into it.
Well, I mean, we have segments for that.
Yeah. Okay, it is a little awkward. All right, well,
I'd say that I enjoyed watching it,
uh-huh.
but only because I knew that it was from the 80s.
Okay. All right. That is fair. I actually enjoyed this viewing of it almost as much as I've always enjoyed watching this movie.
Really?
I enjoyed sharing it with you guys. I enjoyed the meta commentary that we had on it. I get that it's outdated and you can't do a lot of this anymore and all that. I get all of that. And yet, with that in mind, I was able to enjoy the parts of it that were funny. I got to cringe and still enjoy the parts that are no longer appropriate. I liked it. I enjoyed watching it. That's rare because most of these, the boys like them more than I do. I find them too cringy and I'm too embarrassed about them.
Beard Salmon.
Oh, Beard Salmon. That's the title of this episode. Oh my God. Okay. The Beard Salmon is the worst part of this film. And I mean, from the very first time I ever watched it, that thing grossed me out and turned my stomach.
Where our main character is dressed as Santa Claus. And he goes into
our main character. You mean Lewis Winthorpe,
Captain Worcestershire,
played by Dan Aykroyd? Lewis Winthorpe, the main character. You were just watching the movie. You know his name is Winthorpe. Don't you give me that face. You know. Anyway,
Jeffrey Westminster.
Anyway, Winthorpe is dressed as Santa, and
he sneaks. Doesn't sneak, but he just walks into a Christmas party, a black tie event, and just starts stealing food, meat, and he sticks a salmon into his, like, Santa jacket pocket. And later, he's on a bus, and he just pulls it out through his beard and just starts eating it.
And he's got, I mean, like, he's already filthy. The beard is gray, it's so dirty, and he's eating salmon through the beard, so he's having to pull beard out of his teeth while chewing, ugh. God, it was disgusting. I hate that scene. I hate it. But, you know, other than that, it was pretty good.
Hey, well, yeah, Dan Aykroyd, who you recognize.
Right, see, okay, Dan Aykroyd.
Eddie Murphy.
Eddie Murphy you recognize. Look, he doesn't even have to play dumb on these. He actually
almost Bill Murray's brother.
Yeah, it wasn't Bill Murray's brother. Damn it. I thought for sure this was yet another Brian Doyle Murray flick. I would have swore that he played the butler, Coleman. But he didn't. It was some other dude. Okay, and then you recognize Jamie Lee Curtis?
I did not.
Jamie Lee Curtis from Halloween? From True Lies?
Who'd you play in True Lies?
Schwarzenegger's wife?
Oh, okay. Yeah.
And then my last go-to would be, you know, her and Lindsay Lohan in Freaky Friday, the remake.
God, that's a terrible movie.
I loved that movie.
The remake?
I really enjoyed that.
Really?
Yeah, I did. I'm sorry. I'm a sucker for that. Who else was in this that you... He thought he recognized Don Ameche's voice, but we can't figure out where from. Don Ameche, who played Mortimer Duke, one of the old bastards. Was there anyone else in there that we recognized?
There was the mustachioed man that I could swear played a villain in something.
Oh, yeah. The judge, head of, president of the stock exchange, whatever it was, the guy that they went to dinner with that told the escargot joke. I would swear that we've seen him in something too, but I looked him up and we can't find him anywhere. Oh, and Frank Oz. So you recognize Frank Oz. Get to, from the Muppets, the guy that played Yoda, Miss Piggy, Fozzie Bear.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that guy.
I'm gonna pretend I know what you're talking about.
You son of a... No, you have watched so many Muppets. Don't you dare pull this on me. Alright. So, alright. That's it for people we recognize. Alright. Yes. Now, the stuff we can't get away with today.
Let me get my list.
Why don't you get your list? You can start with blackface if you want.
Cool. I'm gonna start with blackface.
Wait.
You can't do blackface.
What?
You can't have Dan Aykroyd in blackface.
Are you sure?
I am 100% positive. It would be...
We had Obama as president. Aren't we living in a post-racial America?
It would still be racist if Eddie Murphy did blackface. Oh, wait.
So, okay. You can't do the blackface.
Thanks, Mom.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, you're still so loud, dude.
I know.
Sorry. So, anyway... yeah, every time the phone dings, that's because Aiden's too loud. So
I'm excited.
In addition to that, you could get away with all the boobs in a movie today, although they wouldn't, because
right.
It was really super gratuitous. Let's see. What else was in there? Oh, go ahead.
Eddie Murphy being really rapey towards the beginning of the movie.
Oh, that was not so rapey. He was a little... A little forward in his come on towards the...
The barbershop rapey quartet.
Once again, just because some frat guys are singing songs about their
gorilla
sexual...
rape.
Alright, gorilla rape is really over the top. Oh man, did we think gorilla rape was funny back in the 80s.
Did you? How often did it come up?
Just that movie. Hold on. There was a very similar, bull rape scene in Top Secret. So, Val Kilmer movie, Top Secret with the spies. And the... Val Kilmer, he was Iceman from Top Gun.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, it was... Yeah, the gorilla rape scene... All right, first off, the live gorilla had almost as bad a gorilla costume as the fake gorilla.
The guy in a gorilla costume.
Right. The Jim Belushi in a gorilla costume, who he doesn't recognize, and there's...
Well, I know the name.
Yeah, well, he knows the Belushi name, but Jim Belushi is not the talented one. John Belushi is the talented one. Jim Belushi is the lump that somehow gets credit because his brother was a comic genius. Anyway, it was... Oh, and you did recognize the detective who was the principal from Breakfast Club. Breakfast Club. You've seen Breakfast Club,
yes,
haven't you?
Have.
Okay.
Real quick, so I've been keeping count through this whole movie about things you couldn't get away with, and we got Rich Asshole, we've got...
You can get away with Rich Asshole.
You probably could, but the regular just being an 80s dick, like, that asshole count, I've lost track of, and I haven't lost track of assholes since the anal party of 2002.
Stop that. That was Jacob's joke.
I had to include it. It was good.
All right, The racist count was actually pretty high. And now, here's the deal.
It wasn't just lines, though.
Right.
It was the movie itself.
Here's the thing. The rich snobs were openly racist about stuff,
uh-huh.
And that was okay for racism because that
sort
was...
Sort of.
Well, because that was the intent of the movie.
They dropped a few too many N-words.
But the point of the movie was to demonstrate that they were... really inherently racist and that they were just terrible, awful people. And that's fine because they're made out to be bad people.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the problem is that...
Can I point out a scene?
Yeah.
When our main character is arrested and he's in the police station, he's the only white guy out of the arrested criminals.
Exactly the point I was going to be making is that they're trying to make this point about your station in life and breeding versus...
Oh, yeah. The old guys talking about human breeding.
Yeah, breeding versus environment.
Nurture versus nature, really.
Right. And yet we wind
Except
up...
Except way creepier.
We wind up in this situation where they're in the police station, and here's Dan Aykroyd, being falsely accused and framed, and he's arrested. And then behind him, there's a whole line of other criminals. Every single one of them is black. Every one of them.
One of them was Hispanic.
No.
Oh, really? Yeah.
No, there was one who looked Hispanic, and then the camera changed angles. I'm like, oh, nope, he's black.
Yep.
When Jamie Lee Curtis, as the white prostitute with a heart of gold, is walking home to her apartment, everywhere
she's the only white person.
Everywhere in her neighborhood, here's the potential drug dealers on the corner, here's the poor bums in the alleyway warming their hands over a fire, here's the every single poor person in that shot was black. She was the only white person that lived in that neighborhood. Insane.
Did you even notice that in the 80s?
No. No, because that's what poor neighborhoods looked like, we assumed. That's what movies and TV had always showed us. Why would we doubt that? That was the 80s.
You had to at least notice something was up.
This movie was 35 years ago, man. 35 years. Holy cow.
Back when Dad was in college.
No. In fact, in the 80s, this movie would have been considered slightly progressive for making such a statement about nature versus nurture and race and all that. Because we didn't realize, we honestly did not say anything about the blackface in 1983. I am amazed that we didn't say anything.
It's real dangerous to be a turkey this close to Thanksgiving,
Dad. That was pretty funny.
So, no, it was not. Okay, one bit of racism you could get away with is Eddie Murphy's fourth wall break.
Yeah, again, I don't know that was a comment on their racism or just their classism, but
in this movie, there's no difference.
The fourth wall break, and there's only one in this entire movie, is when the Dukes have him sat down and they're trying to explain what this whole commodities brokerage thing is. And so they're explaining to him, ham and, well, it's pork bellies and OJ and all this. And
pork belly, like you used to make bacon. Bacon is something you'd find in a bacon, lettuce, and tomato sandwich.
And right after they explain that bacon is something you would find in a BLT, Eddie Murphy breaks the fourth wall, looks dead at the camera for half a second, and then boom, we're right back to the scene. And it was the funniest moment in the movie for me. I love that scene. I've loved it since I first saw the movie. It was really well played. Eddie Murphy used to be a comic genius. He really did.
A couple notes that I have that don't pertain to any segment we have. An orchestra does not help you get donations.
With the Salvation Army?
The bell barely does anything.
Yeah, well, they actually, they still, every now and then, they try and have musicians that play at the Salvation Army buckets. It's usually, at best, one person with a guitar or a horn. But
to explain, during the beginning of this movie, there's a Salvation Army woman ringing a bell, and there's like a 7-person orchestra around her playing the opening music to the movie.
Exactly.
Also, another thing about the opening is way too many shots of statues.
Okay, you didn't notice that this was set in Philadelphia.
Oh, I know where it was set.
Did you see the statue of Rocky?
Yes, I did. That's what sparked the comment.
Kills me because I think Rocky was like 76 or something. And this movie was
our only notable person of importance is a fictional character.
Right. This movie was in 83. So like Philadelphia put up a statue of Rocky within 5 years of the movie being made. And I assume Rocky won Best Picture that year or something. So I assume,
We've read something about stuff you can't get away with.
Yeah.
The use of the word faggot.
Yeah, the 80s are rife with that stuff.
Doesn't mean I can't call it out.
And in this
particular... The 80s was wrong!
And in this particular case, I would like to defend the notion that at least this is the first time we've seen the use of that word where it wasn't being bandied as an insult. It was literally just the description of a gay person. Like, instead of saying a gay person, he says faggot. And it wasn't meant to be insulting in as much as, except, you know, as far as, obviously, if you're a heterosexual male in the 80s, then the idea of homosexuality is instinctively distasteful to you. But it was not used as a direct insult as we've seen it a bunch of other times.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, still pretty gross. So, for what it's worth.
Just the last of my notes here.
God, you taking notes is really going to get on my nerves.
Is it?
Man, you're so thorough.
Yeah. Okay. So, there's a lot of police corruption in that movie.
Well, yeah, because you have to. You have to make this thing work.
Right. But, I mean, how many cops are going to be bad cops? And how many of those cops are still going to be cops after you've bribed them?
Well, okay,
Like, these guys sunk a lot of money into this bet for it to be $1.
Maybe if it was Baltimore, you would find this many crooked cops.
Oh, my God!
Oh, Baltimore's terrible, dude. Baltimore lately, they've been caught on camera twice openly planting drugs on a person. Yeah, caught on camera twice because they would have swore they told that guy to turn his body cam off, and he didn't. So, it's just crazy.
And one more thing. That stock market scene.
Oh, yeah. You know what?
I still have no clue what's going on there.
I never had any clue when we first watched it. At the very end of Trading Places, the whole thing culminates in them winding up at the New York Stock Exchange, and it's just a madhouse before computerization of the process.
Oh, we forgot to talk about the twist in the middle of the movie.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Before computerization of this whole process, everything's done by hand with manual slips of paper and people entering things into punch machines, and I have no idea how any of that works. But this movie made that scene out, that trading scene on the floor, to be this huge climactic thing. I mean, like the final climax scene of any sports movie. I mean, it was that dramatic. It was this last minute thing, and they wind up. You know, all I know is they sit around and wait. They sit around and wait. They wait till the price gets high enough, and then they start selling. They start selling orange juice now that it's super high. And then when it gets to the very bottom and everything bottoms out, then they start buying it all back up. And so they've managed to sell high, buy low, and they make a killing and the Dukes go under. But I still don't understand how it all works. But it doesn't matter. The thing was dramatic. And I still think a glorious scene. Really well done.
But I hope that, no person from a foreign country sees this and thinks that that's how all Americans do business. Because that's just not...
Oh, it was back in 1983. All Americans.
Okay, but as I said before, the one major thing that you definitely can't get away with today is going from a life-switching comedy to a full-on heist movie.
Yeah, that was weird. And that was weird back in the 80s, but we kind of forgave it because Stripes did the same thing. Stripes had this sudden tone twist in the middle. And yeah, Trading Places, we spent an hour and 20 minutes on this life-switching movie where they both of them become fish out of water, and we watch them adapt and figure out the mystery of it. And then, boom, at an hour and 20 minutes, two-thirds of the way through the film, suddenly the last third, the final act of the movie, becomes a giant heist movie. Like 40 minutes worth of heist movie. Crazy. And the tonal change is a little jarring. And I like the end part less than I like the beginning. I mean, that third act with the gorilla and the train and the stupid costumes, I like that way less than I like the rest of the movie. But still, you know, I've always liked this film. So...
All right. Does it hold up?
No, it didn't hold up. I mean, as much as I enjoyed watching it,
20%.
Yeah, it did not hold up. Could you remake it for today?
Yeah.
I mean, you'd have to take out all the racism, and you'd have to take out
gorilla rape.
Yeah, have to remove 100% of the gorilla rape. But it could be done. Should you?
No.
I don't know if it's worth it.
Now the question is, are we going to put Eddie Murphy in it? Because he doesn't have the best track record at this point.
Yeah. Oh, man. All right. Let me tell you what. For those of you who have seen Valley Girl.
That's not the movie we're talking about.
I know. For those of you who have seen Valley Girl, when it gets to this question, Could you remake it for today? And should you? All right.
Whoa.
I just want to say, Valley Girl, I went to go look up Valley Girl and just see. I was looking up stars in it because I thought that was the movie we were going to watch this week. And I saw that they have remade Valley Girl. Like, it's coming out this year, supposedly. And the way it's billed, the top billing is two women. And I thought, oh my God, if they turned Valley Girl into a lesbian love story, that would be the way to remake that film. Holy shit, what an awesome film that would be. And then I look further down and, oh, no, there's the name of the guy. Oh, yeah, no, never mind. That's not what they're doing. I don't know why they put Mae Whitman at the top of that list. But that would have been the most badass thing ever. But, oh well, it didn't happen. So whenever we do watch Valley Girl, I don't have that to throw on
the
table.
So the answer to would we and should we is, I mean, you could, but you shouldn't.
Right. You could, but, man, yeah, I don't know that it's worth it. I really don't. Do we have anything else?
No. I'm good.
Okay, can you do this next part quietly?
I mean, probably not.
Go ahead.
It's time for the Ron-O-Matic.
Oh, there it is. Hot dog. This is the Nerd Pride Radio Ron-O-Matic. At the end of every cast, I bring out R2 in his fully pimped out Potomatic bubble, and he rolls up random topics for me to talk about. And where do these topics come from, you ask? Well, that is where you come in. You want to hear me, hey, Ron, about something? You send your question or topic to me by email, or better yet, in a private message on my forums. I will add it to my Potomatic list, because Potomatic is about whatever Ron wants it to be. All right.
I'm still not used to that.
So, and by the way, I did that without looking, because that one I know. It's the beginning that I have trouble with. All right. So anyway, yeah, we were running low on Ron, so I added a couple more Ron to the list. So now he is back to a third of the list.
And Mom and Jacob are exchanging I love yous, so that's
aww,
that
noise.
Oh, that's
so sweet.
Don't join in.
No. I'm just going to move my phone over so the beeps aren't quite as obvious. All right. So anyway, our first number is 61. There we go. It's a little dark over here.
Sure, it's not your old age.
It's my old eyes, I know. And 61 is...
Monster.
It's not. Oh, it's Kaz. Ron, it's from Kaz. And Kaz says, you have talked about using Reddit from time to time. What do you think of it? Reddit is a lot like Facebook, is a lot like Twitter for me, in that I used it, and I thought, wow, this is amazing. I love this. And then after about 2 or 3 weeks... I finally start getting tired of it, and I'm tired of it giving me notices, and it's way too
you
much work, and then I stop doing it.
Reddit's like a grapefruit. If yeah. you like the taste of grapefruit, you'll like Reddit.
Exactly. But, you know...
Kyle's like Reddit.
Look, I like Reddit a lot. I think it's a really interesting source of news, tidbits, current events. I mean, you subscribe to the subreddits that interest you, and man, you are just getting a feed full of all the stuff that you like. But again, it feels like work to me. It's so much. So I wound up not checking it after a few weeks. I mean, I like it, but, you know, it was hard to keep up with. It's not very personal. So it's just, for me, it winds up, I don't have enough interaction with any of the subreddits or any of the people on it. To make it familiar to me. So instead, it's just a news feed. It's just, you know, impersonal stuff being thrown at me. And sometimes it's interesting, but, I don't know. Doesn't tickle me as much as it used to.
I mean, for me, I like it enough that I actually moderate a couple subreddits at this point.
See? Exactly. And
it's gotta be something that you gotta put some time into, though.
Right. You can build a community around it. Absolutely. Yeah. All right.
That is 69. Dude.
Thank you. 69, dude.
Is from Ronster.
Of course it is.
I was going to say, of course.
What is your favorite Bon Jovi song? Now sing what you can of it as Aiden plays air guitar. All right. Oh, man, this is going to be a tough one because I like a lot of Bon Jovi songs. Okay, because the one I want is, I think, It was like the last track on the Slippery When Wet album, and it was like this weird acoustic country song that he did, and I can't remember any of that. So instead, I'm going to go with Never Say Goodbye, because that was the song of my prom, my senior prom, was Never Say Goodbye by Bon Jovi. All right, you got your air guitar warmed up?
Give me a second, I got to tune it.
Yeah. Huh? Oh, man, yeah. That sounds right.
Yeah, okay, we're good.
You ready?
Yeah.
All right. Remember when we used to park out on Hudson Street, out in the dark? Remember when I lost the keys and you lost more than that in my backseat, baby? All right, that's all I got. I'm not going to go to the chorus. I can't do that.
You got to the sex part and you're done?
Yeah, that's pretty much it. That's
sad.
Well, dude, that was... Look. That song could bring me to tears back in the day. So meaningful. Powerful.
I wasted a good guitar solo on you.
Oh, I'm sorry. Were you still in the middle of your guitar solo?
Well, I mean, I've been playing this whole time and will continue to play through the rest of the podcast.
80. All right. 80 is, and this is actually going to be the last one.
All right.
I know it's only three, but...
It's from Stan!
Hey, Stan! Oh, he's got a bedwetter behead. And it is Achilles, Hector, or Agamemnon.
Ooh, who's Hector? Is that just a dude you know?
Yes, that's it. Stop that.
I promised them I'd keep playing.
He's still playing, just so you know. Look. Hector is... I'm a little hazy on Hector. Because they all kind of blend together. I know Achilles. And Agamemnon, I think, is Helen's husband before Paris steals her away.
I'd marry Achilles.
Would you?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd have my one night of passion with Agamemnon, is that it?
Yeah.
Cool. And then I'd kill Hector.
Alright, I will also marry...
I'd also, while being married to Achilles, buy him some armored shoes.
That's... He is still playing, just for the record. Okay. Are you allowed to quit once we get to the credits? So you don't have to do this all the way through listening to
Betrayal?
Would that
be the end of the episode?
Yes.
All right, then. I guess that's when I'll quit.
Okay. We'll call it. Well, because you're going to have to use your hands for...
Oh, yeah.
For Listener Betrayal.
It's pretty awkward, isn't it?
Yeah, it's going to be really tough. All right. But yeah, I'm going to marry Achilles as well. I don't know. Achilles is really full of himself. And, you know, Agamemnon's available. You know what? Just for fun, I'm going to marry Agamemnon. He's a king. He's got money, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'll take my night of passion with Achilles, and then I'll also kill Hector.
Cool.
We'll call that good. All right.
Screw you, Hector.
And let's turn it over to GLaDOS, and she will give us a recap of this week's episode so far.
Remember when the platform was sliding into the fire pit and I said goodbye, and you were like,
"No way."
And then I was all, "We pretended we were going to murder you."
That was great.
This podcast is copyright 2018 by Nerd Pride Radio. The opening and closing theme is Death Metal Disco by Ian Kronk. My bumper music this week was, I think it's just Fingertips by They Might Be Giants. All the songs I use on this podcast are available on iTunes. Check them out, buy them, enjoy them. I wouldn't put them in my podcast if I didn't love them. This is the part where I skip over the remember that we're part of the Nerd Pride Network.
And instead,
I go straight to, hey, if you want to do something really nice for this podcast, then... go to iTunes or whatever podcatcher you use and leave us a nice review, or leave us a crappy review, but give us 5 stars, because 5 stars is what really makes a difference. Hey, but more than that, if you want to do something super nice for this podcast, quit playing air guitar. Seriously. I'm having a tough enough time remembering this as it is. If you want to do something super nice for this podcast, recommend it to your friends, because you're enjoying it. So go on, spread the word, let other people enjoy it as well. Word of mouth is my bread and butter, people. Let's see, my contact information, mike@nerdprideradio, facebook.com/...
Hurry up, my arm's getting tired.
It's mike@nerdprideradio.com, facebook.com/nerdprideradio, @nerdprideradio on Twitter. But to be completely honest, the very best way to contact me is come sign up for my forums at nerdprideradio.com/nerds. Sign up there. Send me a message. We will become best friends in the world. We'll have fun. Oh, damn it. And remember, I'm always looking for you listeners to do my work for me. Don't forget to send me questions and topics for the Podomatic. Watch out for listener betrayal, blah, blah, blah. Nerd facts about the episode numbers. God, I knew I was going to forget something. But anyway, hey, we'll have fun.
Oh, I missed it.
And now it's time for listener betrayal. Before I start recording every podcast, I go out to my forums and to Facebook, and apparently now Aiden's mail list of people, and we'll say, hey, we're recording. Anything you want to say, post it up. We'll read it off at the end of the podcast, which is what we're doing right now. So we're going to start off at my website at nerdpodradio.com/nerds, and it starts off with me saying... here we go. Now recording. Any theories on why we can't find our 80s movies this week? Valley Girl, not available. Revenge of the Nerds, only with a subscription to Stars. Teen Wolf, only with a subscription to Amazon Prime Spotlight.
Like, that was the name of it.
I can't even just rent it online. Damn. No, I don't know that that's the name for sure. I was still just making that up.
Oh, are you?
So,
cool.
So we watched Trading Places. But hey, what do you want to talk about? And
oh, no, what do you want to talk about?
My only responses are from my brother Kyle. And Kyle says, what book are you reading? I'm still in the middle of Words on the Move by John McWhorter. It's very dense, and I don't read more than one book at a time. So it's a little slow going. Do you wish you could read more? Yes, but I've also been reading more. Like, I've made an intentional effort in the last year to step up my reading. And then, if yes, why don't you? Well, I'm working on it. I still don't read as much as I want, but yeah, you're right. I just need to make time for it. It's not like it's that tough. And then in his next post, Kyle says, hey, looking good, Billy Ray. Feeling good, Lewis.
Cause
we just saw Trading Places.
Yeah.
I love that line.
All right. Next one is from Mike and it says done.
You're still loud.
Sorry.
Yeah, I know. All right. And then we go, yeah, that's way better.
Sorry. Good. At that point, my air guitar's louder than I am.
Now we go over to Facebook. And on Facebook, I get Akiva saying, you've just won the Oscar for Best Actor. Give your acceptance speech. Do you want to do this or you want me to do it?
Sure, I'll do it.
All right, go ahead.
Thanks.
Wow. Oh, man. Ah. They said I couldn't pull off a portrayal of Martin Luther King. But I'm here to prove all the naysayers wrong. Thank you. Thank you, everyone, for supporting me. I couldn't have done it without you. I have proved that a white man can play the role of the most prominent black man in recent American history. So, oh, wait, except Obama. Obama would be pretty prominent, too. Oh, that's a toss-up. Either way.
You could play a double role.
Thank you all, bitches. I'm out. All right. Next is from... See, I don't need a Trepowitz for that one. I think I nailed it.
Yeah, you did.
All right. Next is from Kaz. And Kaz says... Oh, that's right. I forgot I had a question up here. I said, now recording, post here to join us. Also, what's your favorite element? And Kaz says, Xenon is my favorite element. Now, tell us a favorite small press comic. Also, thank you for an outstanding paranoia game. I don't know what you're talking about, dude. All right. A favorite small press comic. I don't have any right now. I mean, literally, the last quote-unquote small press comic I actually followed would have been way back for, like, Dark Horse stuff with the Next Men and that kind of thing. And even that wasn't that small a press. But that was... 30 years ago. So, what?
Define small press.
Like, not the big ones of DC, Marvel, Image.
I mean, would my physical copies of Sam and Fuzzy count?
No.
Damn.
No, we're talking about, like, ongoing comic book series. That isn't...
I mean, it is ongoing.
As a web comic strip translated to book form.
Well, actually, but it is in the style of full-page comics.
Well, maybe. I don't know. I don't have any. Sorry, dude. And Sarah Beth says, so, 222 is our post office box number, my freshman dorm room number, and 222 is my BFF's birthday in addition to this week's podcast episode number. What number seems to repeat in your life? All right.
The number 17.
Not so much anything, because it's all about what I tend to notice. Like, for example, I'm one that I notice when the clock reads 12:34.
I have a friend who has the exact same thing. I was just going to say that.
Anytime the clock reads 12:34, it feels like I happen to be looking at it. Maybe I just check the clock a lot. I don't know. But 1, 2, 3, 4, there it is. But it is funny that you bring up the repeating number, because if you do a search for 222 on Google, the first thing that comes up is not strobogrammatic. No. The first thing that comes up is like 80 listings for sites that help you communicate with the angels. And, yeah, guidance from the angels, it is like this bizarre supplemental spirituality that you could add on to your Christianity because it talks about angels, but it also appears that you could have this whole angel religion thing going on in the absence of Christianity or Judaism or Islam or any of the other religions that deal with angels. Like you don't need the whole big religion thing. You could just have angels. And there are angels everywhere, and they send us signs. And they speak to us through numbers quite often, because that's really convenient for combining angels with numerology. And 222, for what it's worth, the reason it comes up is 222 is a repeated pattern that is often noticed by people. And if you are seeing that a lot, then the angels are telling you that you are in the right place doing what you're supposed to do. 222 is a sign that your life is on the right track, and you just need to keep going. You're perfect.
222 is also three twos in a row.
It is. Good job. Good job, Aiden. That's awesome. Just play your air guitar. All right. And then... Sarah Beth then...
My arm's tired.
You said till the end of the episode. Sarah Beth then says, oh, and Mercury, hands down. Yeah, Mercury is so cool. All right.
I like platinum.
Yeah, platinum's not bad.
All right.
All right.
And now, hold on, let me extend my good old third arm.
Shh.
Oh, so loud. Okay, I got my phone.
All right, so let's go ahead. What do we got?
From Trevor.
Trevor. I know Trevor.
He would like... you don't know Trevor.
Oh, is it a different Trevor?
Different Trevor.
Okay, good.
He wants us to talk about D&D. He wants to know what we think. You should listen to more of the podcast, Trevor.
I have been playing D&D for 40 years. I love D&D and role-playing games in general. And look, dude, when it comes to Dungeons & Dragons, I don't know if you play or what version you play. I quit playing Dungeons & Dragons at 3rd edition, and when mm-hmm. they started switching over to 4th, I switched to...
5th edition's actually fairly good.
Well, you know what? I heard lots of people say good things about 4th edition, but then 4th edition tanked way faster than most other editions, mm-hmm. and so clearly those people were delusional. But 5th edition, yeah, I've heard some good things, but it is truly becoming a very different game now than Pathfinder is. I mean, they have the same superficial similarities in, you know, the classes and the monsters. I mean, you're telling the same stories, but the mechanics of it have become very different mm-hmm. from what I understand. I have stuck with the format of Dungeons & Dragons 3, which is now carried over into Pathfinder. And yes, Pathfinder has mm-hmm. become its own thing, but the framework is still very much D&D 3. Yep. And I love the game. I love it. I play twice a month at least, and now we've added on Starfinder on top of that. Mm-hmm. And
it's pretty much the enough. Game of the house.
Can't get enough. So, for what it's worth.
All right. Stephanie says, in all caps, just because you put syrup on something does not make it pancakes.
Well, yeah, no, I will agree with her on that.
Yeah.
Yeah, just because you put syrup on something does not make it pancakes. Now, well, hold on. Yeah, no, waffles are not pancakes. French toast is not pancakes.
Yeah.
sausage dipped in syrup is not pancakes. No.
Okay, good. We're all in agreement here.
I find nothing to disagree with on that one. I would be fascinated to hear where that comes from.
Katie says, say Beetlejuice three times. What? Say Beetlejuice three times? Why would I say Beetlejuice three times?
Oh, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice, Beetlejuice. I can do it. I'm not scared.
No, see, the joke was that...
I know that you did. You said Beetlejuice three times. I
okay,
got it.
Okay, just make sure. Emily says, I don't do well under pressure. I have nothing creative. Thanks for your input, Emily.
Emily, who, by the way, gave us bed, wed, or behead.
Yeah.
So just so you're aware that she...
It's brilliant when she wants to be.
She has her moments, is what I'm saying.
My friend Trey says, comment on how it's possible that Kobe Bryant just won an Oscar, because, like, wow.
Really?
Yeah, Kobe Bryant won an Oscar.
What was he up for an Oscar for?
I'll Google it.
I didn't know Kobe Bryant was up for an Oscar. That's how out of touch I am. Wow. God, I was just... I was actually thinking of going out and seeing Lady Bird just because I was getting brushed up on my Oscar winners.
Is
but...
Jezebel a movie that came out?
Sure, I don't know.
I don't know.
No, Jezebel is a news site.
Oh, okay.
Kobe Bryant's Oscar win raises eyebrows on social media on Time's Up themed night. I still don't get it. Huh. Okay.
Oscar for an animated short film called Dear Basketball.
Oh, okay, I don't know anything about it. So, wow, that is bizarre.
Cool.
I'll give you that.
A bunch of nothing. Ah, okay. From Sam. Ladies and gentlemen, The Lorax.
Wow. Okay. Thank you, Sam.
All right. And that's all I got.
Okay. Sorry, I just saw Sam's name as it's entered in your phone. That's pretty funny. All right. And then that's it. That's all we got.
Oh,
so...
No. That one's John.
Oh, that's John? Oh.
The second one is Sam.
Got it. Darn, I thought it was a whole name together. That was pretty good.
No.
All right. Anyway, that's everything. This experiment with Aiden's phone seems to have worked out okay. We might do that again next week. I appreciate all you guys showing up. I love you guys. You're awesome. You want to say goodnight, Aiden?
I would love to.
You can stop playing that. Well, wait. No, you can stop playing right after say goodnight, R2.
Goodnight, everybody. Oh, thank God.